भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 10, Text 7. This chapter is called The Nature of Fruitive Activity. Jaya Pachya Griha Shetra Svajana Dravanadishu Udasina Samam Pashyan Sarveshvar Tami Vatmana Jaya Patya Griha Chetra Svajana Dravinadishu Udasina Samam Pashyan Sarveshvar Tami Vatmana Jaya Pachya Griha Chetra Svajana Dravanadishu Svajana Dravanadishu Udashina Samam Pashyan Sarveshvar Tami Vatmana
Jaya Pachya Griha Chetra
Vaishnavis.
Jaya Patya Griha Kshetra
Jaya Patya Griha Kshetra
Svajana Dravinadishu
Svajana Dravinadishu
Udasina Samam Pashyan
Udasina Samam Pashyan
Sarveshvar Tami Vatmana
Sarveshvar Tami Vatmana
Jaya Patya Griha Kshetra
Jaya Patya Griha
Jaya, to wife, Apatya, children, Griha, home, Chetra, land, Svajana, relatives and friends, Dravana, bank account, Adishu, and so on. Udasina, remaining indifferent. Samam, equally. Pashyan, seeing. Sarveshu, and all of them. Artam, purpose. Jiva, life. Atmana, of oneself. Translation purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. One should see one's real self-interest in life in all circumstances and should therefore remain detached from wife, children, home, land, relatives, friends, wealth, and so on. Report. A devotee of the Lord recognizes that his wife, children, home, land, friends, and money are meant to be engaged in loving service of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, he does not frantically make arrangements for the sense gratification of his family and friends. He is not eager to enjoy the false prestige of being master of his wife and the lord of his children, nor is he anxious to gain prestige from his friends and society. Thus he does not envy anyone and is not lazy in the matter of self-realization. He is free from the false sense of proprietorship and always eager to develop his understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is free from false egotism and automatically turns away from useless materialistic conversation. Thus he is steady and not whimsical, and he's always firmly situated in loving friendship at the lotus feet of the spiritual master. The question may be raised as to how one can develop freedom from the false proprietorship. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has given the following example. An ordinary man is very eager to accumulate more and more money, and he maintains his wealth in the form of stocks, bonds, securities, bank accounts, properties, gold, and so on. As long as these different assets are contributing to his financial well-being, he sees them equally and considers that they belong to him. But if some of his assets are taken by the government for taxes, or if they are lost in an unfortunate business arrangement, then he is forced to give up his sense of proprietorship. In the same way, everyone should be intelligent enough to observe that one's sense of ownership over innumerable material objects is not permanent. Therefore, one should develop detachment from these things. If one does not cultivate a loving feeling of friendship for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his pure devotees, the spiritual master, one will undoubtedly be entangled by the network of material society, friendship, and love. One will then remain bound up on the material platform with no hope of permanent happiness. Om Gyanatam Randisha Gananjana Salakaya Chakshanmitamina Tasmai Sri Garve Namaha Vanchako Patrivishcha Kripa Sindhu Bevicha Patitano Pavanibhyo Vaishveva Namo Namaha. So our advancement in Krishna consciousness requires a freedom from false proprietorship of all material possessions. That's sort of the theme of this verse and purport. And in the purport that is referenced here from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he calls this lack of possessiveness. So lack of possessiveness or freedom from false proprietorship are really the same idea, the same thing is being conveyed. And also it's stated that one may have some possessiveness until that purpose is served, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti. The example is given here that one may have some wealth and one has some temporary proprietorship over it, but yet one may lose that. And the example is given here of stocks and bonds and securities, which I thought was interesting. I wondered if Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who wrote his Bhagavatam purports in 1704, was really very familiar with stocks and bonds and securities. Actually, I checked it out, and what Vishnu said was gold and silver. That was more the commodities in that time period. But now, today, people don't really possess gold and silver, but they may have their bonds, their stocks, securing, you know, all of these different things, land, bank accounts. In so many ways, people possess material things, particularly in the form of different monetary elements. So, while one has those things, one uses those things, but they can become lost. So the possession or proprietary control, I would say, those control of those things is very temporary. It doesn't last, and as soon as one loses something like that, one gives it up. So in the same way, all things in the material world are like that. One's family, one's relatives, one's friends, they have some value, one has some relationship with them, but they are temporary and they are gone, of course, at the time of death, if not before then. Still, one does perform one's duties. It's described in this purport that one has to actually follow one's duties, and one has to recognize that all these things are to be engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord. So we have both material dharma and we have sanatana dharma. We have things that we are responsible for, people that we're responsible to. We have duties within this material world. And then we have our sanatana dharma, our eternal duties. Our eternal religious principles, our eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that eternal duty is, of course, bhakti, devotional service. It doesn't mean that we necessarily neglect those other duties. We see them in proper perspective. I was thinking with devotees, well, if, of course, if all one's devotees are family members, that makes it quite easy. One can easily see that one is serving devotees, therefore there's not really a difference between material and spiritual duties. But sometimes we see that we do have other duties. Let's say we have an aging parent who may not be a devotee, but still there's some duty to help them, to take care of them. That's just living in this material world, living in a social connection with people and community. No, that's there. Those kind of duties are there. But the idea is to not lose sight of our primary duty of devotional service to Krishna. So because we have so many connections with so many things in the material world, the tendency is there to become attached to them. And this verse is particularly talking about the situation with householders. They certainly have every possibility or tendency to become attached to things in the material world. And the devotee householder must learn to remain or become dependent upon Krishna. So for those in the renounced order, detachment more or less comes with the territory. It's really, you know, sort of part of the process. If one is in the renounced order, that means detachment in a sense. And it becomes easier. When one is in a house of life, sometimes it is more complicated, not quite so easy. So detachment usually needs to be consciously cultivated by one in the grihastha ashram of life. And of course that cultivation comes about through hearing and chanting the nine process of devotional service. And the grihastha has to learn to accept what Krishna provides, which comes of its own accord, and to avoid what has been spoken here of false proprietorship or possessiveness of material things. Bhagavad Gita 4:22 says, "He who is satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord, who is free from duality and does not envy, who is steady in success and failure, is never entangled, although performing actions." So again, it's a satisfaction with what comes easily of its own accord, not becoming entangled, and therefore one continues to perform one's duties and actions. Prabhupada explained this a little bit in a purport to Bhagavatam 7.14.5. That chapter is called Ideal Family Life. Prabhupada says, "A wise man concludes that in the human form of life, he should not endeavor for unnecessary necessities." Unnecessary necessities, interesting. "But should live a very simple life, just maintaining body and soul together. Certainly one requires some means of livelihood, and one should be satisfied with this. Therefore, instead of hankering for more and more money, a sincere devotee of the Lord tries to," these are Prabhupada's words, "invent some ways to earn his livelihood. And when he does so, Krishna helps him. Earning one's livelihood, therefore, is not a problem. The real problem is how to get free from the bondage of birth, death, old age." So in other words, not that the goal of one's life is to become successful at earning a livelihood. But earning a livelihood is a necessity. It is there. And as Prabhupada says, it will come of its own accord. I was thinking about this where he says to invent some ways to earn his livelihood. In other words, however you earn your livelihood really doesn't matter so much, as long as it's not immoral or illegal. You know. But the idea is to do what needs to do. One needs to perform one's duties so that one can pursue Krishna consciousness. And sometimes I talk to devotees or, you know, talk to in, you know, home programs and like that, and people talk about or ask questions about, well, how do I earn a livelihood? How do I make money? I have these responsibilities, but yet I want to be Krishna conscious and I want to devote time to Krishna consciousness. And usually my answer is, well, do one of two things. Find something that you like to do, that you're good at doing, you can do well, and therefore it keeps your mind free from anxiety. You know, it's not stressful for you. It's something that you can do well. You have the, you know, the propensities that Krishna's given to you. You do that, and you know, spend your time in Krishna consciousness. Or find something that, you know, you can do easily, make some money that doesn't take too much of your time, so you can, you know, devote most of your time to Krishna consciousness. In other words, you be practical. You find some practical solution. You know, myself, I've for the last 25 years, you know, I've mostly been teaching as my livelihood, small livelihood. And it's something that I can do. It's easy. I don't mind it. And, you know, I can just kind of like, you know, deal with very little stress and therefore try to devote most of my energies to Krishna consciousness and service to our society. But everybody has to kind of find that particular process. So sometimes we have this conflict between our material duties or family life duties and this idea of material detachment. So it's kind of like we're balancing both, and you can find many, many scriptural quotations and examples that sort of support both sides. So in one side, marriage and family life are a very natural part of life, especially in this material world. The Grihastha ashram is part of our spiritual practice. It's part of the Varnashram system. Yeah, it's, of course, regulated by many rules and regulations in the Vedic literatures, but it's certainly there. And we see that many great devotee householders. I was looking at the 12 Mahajans once and figured that 7 of the 12 Mahajans, the greatest authorities, are householders. So, and then, of course, we have in Chaitanya Lila Srivas, Acharya Advaita, who, is there any evidence that Advaita ever became renounced or took sannyas? I've never heard that. He was very, very old as a householder, an old, you know, old man, so apparently he was in house course, you know, he's Mahavishnu. But still, they are examples for us. Even though these are not ordinary personality, even though Chaitanya Murnichananda took household life. And of course we have more recently the very wonderful examples of Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, etc. So we see that household life is not an impediment for one attaining the highest platform of devotional service in Krishna consciousness. But there is the other side. And the other side is that being in household life has some dangers. And one can become prone to being more attached to things in this material world. Now, how does that happen? Well, first of all, we may become just overly involved in economic development. Because it's a necessity to support one's family, sometimes that becomes the all-in-all or an over-focus on that, you know, pushes out other things. Or because of having some material facility, that gives one the facility for many, many activities of sense gratification. And that becomes, you know, a detriment to spiritual life. And also sometimes just the stress of maintaining a family, the time involvement like that, may diminish when spiritual practice and sadhana. And it is a fact that it sometimes can be a real challenge, especially young families with children. It becomes difficult sometimes. Sometimes for a young mother, it may be a challenge just to chant 16 rounds. I mean, this is reality. So there are these challenges that are there, and we have to be aware of those. But we have to try to figure out how to meet those in the most Krishna-conscious way as possible. And I think the main thing is to understand, as Prabhupada said several purports, that Grihastha life is not an unrestricted license for sense gratification. And of course, this verse and purport are talking about the problems of the downfalls of one that has that attitude. So all devotees in whatever ashram, whatever state, condition of life, must see themselves as Vaishnavas. Our primary activity is serving Krishna. And actually, all the ashrams give facility for spiritual advancement, including the Grihastha ashram. Prabhupada explains the difference between the Grihastha and the Grihamedi, the householder who is interested in Krishna consciousness versus the one who is interested in material sense gratification. This is from the Science of Self-Realization, Chapter 1. The Grihamedi should be regarded as a blind man driven ahead by uncontrolled senses about to fall into a ditch. Of course, that's from Seventh Canto, Prahlad Maharaj. Talks about the falling into the ditch of material life. The opposite of the Grihamedi, however, is the Grihastha. The Grihastha ashram, or shelter of spiritual family life, is as good as the life of a sannyasi, a member of the renounced order. The Grihamedi is simply interested in the animal necessities of life. The Grihamedi's life is full of calamities, whereas the life of the Grihastha is full of happiness. Now, haven't you noticed that, all of you Grihasthas, how that you're just filled with happiness? Well, it could be, it should be. If we are fully Krishna conscious, our life is filled with happiness, is the idea. In whatever ashram we are in, we will be experiencing the happiness of our relationship with Krishna. But I guess the warning here is that we don't want to become overly attached and not become like Grihamedis by seeing one's prime purpose in life as being the advancement in spiritual life. And so we have to do this by controlling material desires, to acting in a regulated way, and acting for Krishna. We become attached to Krishna through our service and sadhana. And as attachment grows, then naturally detachment from material life comes about. And we have to act in that spirit using whatever we were given in Krishna's service. It's the principle of Yukta Vairagya. So we understand that devotional service is not dependent on a material situation or facility. I remember in the early days of the movement, some of you older devotees remember that, you know, many, many devotees, I'd say primarily men, came to the conclusion that grihastha life was an impediment and wanted to give it up. And we saw so many people artificially at a young age want to give up their household life. And then what happened a couple years later, they married somebody else. So in other words, it just creates a disturbance. It's simply a disturbance to this false renunciation. One needs to perform one's duties in a spirit of Krishna consciousness, not to give up those duties. Now, it's interesting that this idea of possessiveness has been discussed in this verse in purport. In Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura's commentary on this verse, he concludes, which is similar, it's also mentioned here in this purport, he says, but we do not give up possessiveness to Krishna and Guru. So there's material possessiveness, which is a detriment to Krishna consciousness, but there is spiritual possessiveness, which is helpful, which we want to cultivate. So devotees who are in a relationship, a spiritual rasa with Krishna, Prabhupada says they have no more material life. If you're serving Krishna, there is no material life. We may seem to be in this material world, but it's actually not material life. So our goal is to become, not just to have these families and cultivate Krishna consciousness within our families, but to become part of Krishna's family and live eternally with him. In our, of course, the five rasas are there. And as we develop our spiritual rasa, then one becomes more and more connected with Krishna and Krishna's family. But this is a gradual process. Knowing one's sarup is a very advanced stage of Krishna consciousness. It is not something that the neophyte devotee even really needs to think about very much, in my opinion. In other words, we know that it's there, we understand the philosophy, we understand the goal, but we're realistic about our own neophyte stage of advancement. So we want to come to this platform by making Krishna the center ever increasingly, step by step, in the process of sadhana. So Krishna consciousness is not primarily a process of renunciation. Some austerity, some renunciation may be there, renunciation of the four sinful activities, things like that, but primarily it's a positive process. We are adding Krishna to everything in one's life. So renunciation isn't the key, attachment to Krishna is the key. I was thinking of a couple of examples of how the relationships between devotees and even family relationships are there, even at the highest level of Krishna consciousness. This is from a purport in the by Prabhupada in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 6th chapter, verse 39. This was in the middle of the story of Putana. It doesn't directly relate to that, but it's kind of like, there's a few, you know how it is in the Bhagavatam, and especially in the 10th canto, you'll have all these wonderful pastimes, and sort of right in the middle in two or three places, you know, it's like Sukadeva Goswami inserts all this philosophy. You know, there'll be a pastime and there'll be several verses that will really explain that, explain its meaning, how this applies to us, how this exemplifies, you know, Krishna conscious principles. So anyway, the purport 10.639, it says, the word samsara refers to attachment for one's body, home, husband, or wife, and children. But although the gopis and all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan had the same affection and attachment for husband and home, Their central affection was for Krishna in some transcendental relationship, and therefore they were guaranteed to be promoted to Goloka Vrindavan in the next life to live with Krishna eternally in spiritual happiness. So it's interesting that even there in Vrindavan, the inhabitants may have had some affection and attachment for husband and home, but yet Krishna was the center. Krishna was the primary attachment, and therefore, of course, they had their eternal spiritual relationship guaranteed. So that may be there. We're not impersonal. It's not that it's Krishna and me and nobody else. You know, I'm just, my relationship with God, and, you know, it's kind of like in this sort of vacuum in the ether or something. No. Krishna's filled with relationships, with variety, with eternal associates, activities, pastimes. So we are involved in a personal relationship with Krishna and with Krishna's family. So just like in a family, we have parents and we love the parents, we have siblings, brothers and sisters, we automatically love them and have affection and attachment for them. So we're part of Krishna's family. And so therefore, we have relationships with all the devotees of Krishna. So even in the spiritual world, that's there. And of course, if you read the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, especially in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but I think even more so in Chaitanya Bhagavat, like that, you'll see these just incredible love relationships between the devotees. You know, they see each other and they're embracing and crying and falling down in ecstasy. And my gosh, I think, you know, it's like, wow, that we would feel that way towards our God brothers and God sisters. I mean, it'd be wonderful. You know, but that's a very advanced stage of Krishna consciousness. But they're not just seeing, you know, Lord Chaitanya or Krishna. They're seeing Krishna and Lord Chaitanya in his devotees. They're seeing that that pure relationship is there. So we want to accept relationships which are favorable to Krishna consciousness. There's another example I was thinking in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, as Gopal, is that his name? Yeah, is traveling through all the different areas and spheres and through the different planetary systems, and he describes Vaikuntha Loka. And he describes in Vaikuntha that, you know, there's all these devotees, you know, with their forearms and the whole bit, and they all have families and their own houses. And I sort of picture, I don't know what I pictured Vaikuntha as, just, you know, Vishnu and Lakshmi sitting there, and then everyone's kind of like, I don't know, just standing around or whatever. No, but they actually have families and they have homes and they have the whole bit. It says the central affection was for Krishna in transcendental relationship. Again, it's not that these things aren't there. It's not some like impersonal, you know, white light or something. All relationships are there in the spiritual world, but Krishna is the center. So the deepest relationship is with Krishna, and that actually enhances, and it actually makes all other relationships perfect. So, of course, there's a process that we can achieve this. Srila Prabhupada in a purport, he also quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Prabhupada says, we also can change our homes into Vaikuntha. That is not difficult. We simply have to follow the authorized process of Krishna consciousness. How to do this is explained by Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Krishna samsara kara chari anachara. Giving up all sinful activities, carry on your worldly duties only in relationship to Lord Krishna. So two things required. Follow one's duties in relationship with Krishna and give up sinful life, which means following the four regular principles. So by doing so, we turn our homes into Vaikuntha. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is recommending, and that's what we see the examples of the residents of the spiritual world. You know, maybe not always so easy, especially when we're worried about paying the electric bill and who's taking out the garbage. You know? But nevertheless, even though those difficulties are there in household life, the devotee wants to always see the purpose, always see the goal, and always see the center. The center of the Grihastha mission is the mission of Krishna consciousness. So we need to develop that in our lives. And the essence of Grihastha life is fulfilled when there is that spirit of service, spirit of bhakti. And that is often done by an idea or not just an idea, but activities of service, of giving back to others. There needs to be something more than within the family, within the grihastha ashram, than just taking care of the family. If that's all there is, it can be okay, particularly if it's Krishna conscious and one's raising one's children as devotees. That's very good. That's the main purpose. But there also should be a sense of also that a grihastha gives to others. Like even in Vedic society, charity was a necessity for householders, right? They were supposed to, in other words, because they were generating some wealth or some income, they had to give some of that in charity, and best, of course, to give that to the Brahmins, give that to spiritual personalities. So I guess we could translate that in this age is that if grihastha generates some income, you know, of course they support the other ashrams, because the other three ashrams don't create income, only the grihastha ashram does. And we need to support the temples, support Krishna conscious projects, support the preaching, you know. And we can also personally preach, you know. If you're not quite sure how to do it, I think Sri Vrindavan is ready to help you out, to set you up. So you can go out, we just heard you go out on Saturday afternoon for 2 hours, door to door. So however one does it, it can be done. And if one doesn't feel like to do that, then one can make some donation to purchase the books that other people can distribute, or to help these temples, or to pay the electric bill for this wonderful temple for Radha Shyama Sundar. So all of these things are part of our household duties. As we support the activities of Krishna consciousness, we support this ISKCON movement, you know, we're fulfilling our duties, you know. Of course, you know, one can do more and more progressively as one's time changes, especially in our later years. Many of us didn't have the opportunity when our children are grown and less demands in those ways, that one can minimize material activity more and focus more on Krishna consciousness and trying to make more and more contribution to this ISKCON mission, to Srila Prabhupada's service of spreading Krishna consciousness throughout the world. So we always have to keep that in mind. And of course, everything is, you know, sort of, for every time there is, you know, there is a season or whatever, that sometimes we can't do as much at certain times of our life, but then there may be other times later when more opportunities are there. And so one needs to make sure one takes those opportunities, not that one, when one becomes old, one simply retires. Of course, we may slow down a bit. That's natural with old age, but yet, every time I think about, you know, gee, I'm about ready for retirement age, there's one thing that comes that really, really stops that thought process, and that's that Srila Prabhupada started his preaching in the Western world at age 69 or 70 years old. So, not that we can imitate, but we certainly see Prabhupada's example up to the absolute last moments of his life, serving Krishna, preaching Krishna consciousness. Sometimes it's heartbreaking when you see some of those films, the last days or two, he can barely speak, and Prabhupada's holding the microphone, translating the Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, I mean, such an amazing example. So, we can't do like Srila Prabhupada, but at least we can do a little bit. At least we can become inspired by his example to try to continue to give something back. To give something back to Prabhupada, to help to give Krishna consciousness to this world and society. It's desperately in need of spiritual life, desperately in need of the real answers to birth, death, disease, and old age, you know, and desperately in need of something that gives real happiness, real satisfaction, real meaning to life. So whatever situation we're in, whatever ashram we're in, we need to take whatever opportunity we can and try to focus on that. Step out of our, you know, perhaps our feeling of limitations or whatever it might be, or that we're so busy or this or that, and try to do something. You know, do one small thing. One small thing more to help this Krishna conscious movement. Okay. So, I'll stop at that point. And are there any comments or thoughts on this verse? Jai Prabhupada. Yamaraj.
Thank you for the very nice class, Prabhu. One question that has come to my mind toward the end of the class is, like Christians, they donate and they take care of their church and they give in charity and things like that. And we do that also. So where does consciousness come into play in terms of, just differentiate between just doing something, donating and building a big church and all this, and then the consciousness of
Sometimes these things are done, examples you gave are probably like in the mode of goodness, right? That one gives in charity, and there's so many things that are there. Even the Bhagavad Gita mentions things that are in the mode of goodness. And these are good to do. They help one to advance, they give actual happiness, they help us to have a better society, a better world. But it's different than transcendental activity. And Krishna consciousness, of course, is the level of pure goodness, or Shuddha-sattva, where our service, our engagement is to please God, to please Krishna with everything we do. And it's kind of like, I think the Christian sort of approach is this, if you serve man, you're serving God. Ours is sort of the opposite. We say, if you serve God, you automatically serve everyone, right? When you water the root of the tree, all the branches are nourished, all the purposes of small ponds are met by the great reservoir of water. So when one serves Krishna, then automatically one is serving everyone. Now that doesn't mean that we ignore all the problems, people suffering, everything, and say, I'm just serving Krishna. No. Part of serving Krishna is to help others. We certainly want to provide service and support to devotees, first of all, then of course to others. But we do so in such a way that gives spiritual life as well. We don't divorce that or take that away. So, not just a Christian, but anyone who's doing something, they may want to help poor people or help hungry people and provide soup kitchens or feed them. Now that's a good thing to do. But devotees, when they do that, we want to give prasadam, right? So the devotee is always thinking how to help the person's spiritual life, not just the material suffering. And I think that's the distinction. Okay. Oh, Apurva, welcome. Good to see you again.
Some very nice points. You were speaking about spiritual possessiveness as a point. Spiritual possessiveness.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I'm wondering if you can expand on that a little bit and bring it into you.
Okay, the idea is that we're trying to get away from material attachment. There's a right to be possessive or attached to Guru or to Krishna. In other words, cultivate that attachment or that possessiveness. In other words, we do feel very possessive of Srila Prabhupada, right? We're not detached. We're very, very much attached. We want to have a loving relationship with Guru and Krishna. We want to have their blessings. We want to be able to serve them, to please them. So I think that's the main idea. Okay. So I'll go to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you.